Had it grown up, it would have been very mediumistic. It would grow up and develop in the spirit world. Q. But is not the earth experience necessary? A. No, it will be brought up here. Iola thanked Mrs. Rhett for the handsome frame which she had bought for her picture at Detroit. She said, "Oh, Mrs. Rhett, you spent too much money on that frame." This is remarkable knowledge of what she had seen at Detroit a fortnight before. The information was quite correct. Iola was followed by Dr. Sharp, who said he would assist the spirits at the afternoon seance, but could not manifest himself if he was to speak at Julia's bureau meeting in the evening. The last spirit to manifest was Mr. W. E. Gladstone, who gave me kind promises of help. He spoke of Iola and of a mutual friend. The voices both on this occasion and on the evening of the 23rd were low down, with this exception it was a very good seance. Wednesday, May 24, 1911. 2.5 to 4.15 p.m. Sitters, the two ladies of the house, Sir H.S., his friend, and myself. Four spirits talked volubly, but were unable to identify themselves to the complete satisfaction of Sir H.S. His friend's wife, undoubtedly, came to him. Iola manifested, and told the visitors she had seen them looking at her picture. I do not quite know whether she was referring all the time to her last portrait, now exhibited in the lecture room of the London Spiritualist Alliance, or to the pictures in my library. Both gentlemen had seen them all. Once she said to Sir H., "Did you not see the wreath around my head?" which would refer to the picture on exhibition. I told one of our visitors the story of how Grey Fever tried to instruct me in January 1909, as to how to behave at a seance. My little joke was only halfway through when there was a loud shout in front of me here, and the Indian was in our midst. He said very little more, but subsided. One of the ladies had a distinct talk with her husband in spirit life, much to her pleasure and to that of her daughter who was present. The anxiety of the spirits to identify themselves to Sir H. caused a blur in trying to pronounce their names. I hope that he and his friend will sit with Mrs. Rhett again. The meeting in the evening consisted of the members of Julia's bureau and myself, presided over by Mr. W. T. Stead. There were 10 people present besides the psychic. All were mediumistic except one gentleman and myself. The atmospheric conditions were excellent. We sat from 7.15 to 9.15 p.m. One the party sat in the cabinet and took shorthand notes. He accomplished his difficult task with skill, and it is mainly owing to him that I am able to give my detailed account. After the religious observances usual when Julia's meetings take place, the room was made pitch dark. There were two aluminium trumpets on the floor. Mrs. Rhett first saw a lady who had died of dropsy, and the initial E. She was identified by me as Grandma, who had charge of my little granddaughter, and who had spoken to me at the meeting in the morning. We then sang, and one of the spirits joined in, using one of the trumpets. Julia next spoke through the trumpet and greeted the circle, concluding with "My dear Mr. Stead." The voice was rather faint. She proceeded, "I am going to help you in every detail. Success, success. Victory is won. Mr. K., our cup is full. I am very happy tonight. I am happy to speak to Mr. Stead. I will not detain you. Good day, I will come again." Then Dr. Sharp, Mrs. Rhett's control. "Good evening, friends. I am a Scotsman. We had better bide a wee. How do you do, Mr. Stead? How do you do, Brother K.? Well, well, this is a happy meeting. How do you do, ladies? Mr. Stead, I thought, after you were impersonated in New York the other day, that you might be impersonated here. A. No one could personate in this room. Truth prevails, mediums. I will come again." Mrs. Rhett described an elderly gentleman whose name was John Cooper. "This is the name of an old schoolfellow of mine." When I said so, three hard knocks sounded on the table. A lady received good evidence of the presence of her son. Then came Mr. W. D. Stead's son William, who had a long talk with his father, of a strictly evidential character. It was one of the best episodes in my collection. No reasoning adult could doubt that here were a father and son talking face to face. During the whole of this remarkable seance, raps were going on all round the room, on the table, on the walls, on the floor. Wafts of air blew round the circle in the faces of the sitters. This phenomenon I have frequently experienced at Husk's seances, but not of the same strength. Frequently two, sometimes three, voices spoke at the same moment in different parts of the circle. It was somewhat confusing. The spirit known as Uncle, of Mr. Husk's band, spoke and identified himself. It was said that John King was present. Ebenezer, another of Husk's band, constantly talked through the trumpet. A voice, "Good evening, good evening. I am Stuart Mill. Mr. Stead, John Stuart Mill. It is the first time you have been here?" "Eh, it is the first time I have had the opportunity of introducing myself." "Q, you were the member for Westminster. Do you know what they have decided over the women's suffrage bill today?" "Eh, yes. I am quite interested, and I want to see it win." "Q, you will win." "Eh, yes, I shall do my duty, and protect the rights of women here." "Q, they had a meeting today to decide whether they would give facilities for the women's suffrage bill." "A. They will give them. I shall see to that." "Q, Mr. Asquith is opposed to it." "A. Yes, but he is not the ruling power of the world." "Q, he is Prime Minister." "A. He has a lot to say, but I am going to try and move the press." "Q, and your friend Lord Morley?" "A. Yes. He is staunch, much lost here on account of a spirit talking at the other side of the circle." "Q, you are quite sure you are going through with that bill?" "A. Victory. Must win. Fight for the right, stand for the just." "Miss Frances Havgall, a cousin of my wife, here came, but, instead of speaking to me, conversed with a man 2 feet on my left. She was not able to say much." Mr. Stead objected to two spirits talking at once, as he thought it confusing for his stenographer. He said to the spirit, "You can take away one trumpet if you like." After a private communication from a young man in spirit life to his mother in earth life, a loud voice was heard to say, I come, me gravy there. How do you do? Big chief on big paper. Mr. Stead, I am glad to hear you speak." "A, me here. Big chief steady, me talk to you a little, and then me go. Me no care." "Q, can you hit me on the head with the trumpet?" "A, yeah." Mr. Stead was lightly touched with the trumpet. There was some talking at the opposite side of the circle with spirits, which irritated Greyfeather, who said, "Me tell shut up, me say man in box no can write, he not here," meaning the stenographer in the cabinet. "Me say this, chief steady. You going to have much run about, not eat much. You go here, go there, talk, talk, talk." "Mr. Stead, I am afraid I have a lot to do." "A, you are going to go off here, another country." "Q, what am I going to talk about?" "A, war, fight, fire." "Really, yep. One time more before you shut eye, death. You go round big place. You going to lose a chief by and by, and you going to be bad in your heart about it." Here another voice mentioned the name of a great statesman, "Me heapy glad to come." "Q, do you find this as good as Detroit?" "A, heapy much better." "How do you do, K dash?" A professional medium who was present. To the circle, "Me tell shut up, hear what they say to little squaw with shawl on her neck, an elderly lady present, your heart sick with stomach, all your trouble come from that. Me want to say you get flutter, flutter heart, and it splutters, from nerves, bad stomach gauze. Well, goodbye, chief steady, goodbye, chief more, goodbye, chief in box. Me go across pond." I have related this at some length, assisting myself with the stenographer's notes, because I consider it a very remarkable incident. Greyfeather, as I have frequently reminded the reader, is the control of Johnson at Toledo, Ohio, a materializing medium of great power. He was with us only while Johnson did not require his services, that is, from 5 a.m. to 2 p.m., Toledo time. He manifested 3 times on this day, 1, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. 3, 8 p.m., English time, and his voice was often raised to a shout. On two occasions at least he might have been heard at the front door of the house, yet, to him, the surroundings were utterly strange, and his only friends in the room were Mrs. Rat and myself. He quickly discerns the other medium in the room, Mr. K, and gives his whole attention to the master of the house. He calls the cabinet a box, which is his invariable custom when using the organism of Johnson. Though coming from a city 4,000 miles distant to a place where he is a perfect stranger, he is able to talk about the death of an English infant, to tell me in whose care it has been placed, to show a knowledge of the occupation of an English man of letters, to foretell the death of an English statesman, to report upon the health of his own medium, and to diagnose the condition of an English lady. He is tender, sympathetic, prescient, and dictatorial by turns. Take it all, this day was full of the most marvelous instances of invisible power, and shows what even the North American Indian spirit can do when placed in the most favorable surroundings. In this case the atmospheric conditions were of the best, the house quiet, and far removed from all disturbing influences, the séance room one which was never used for any other purpose, plenty of flowers in it, and not a man or woman present who did not fully believe in the facts of spiritism. Mrs. Rhett, to Mr. Stead, do you know the name of a man called W. Dash? Mr. Stead, yes. G. W., the member for C. Mrs. W., he is here. Mr. Stead was hit on the knee. Voice, I am G. W. Q., how are you? A. I don't know, I don't know. Q., do you know where you are now? A. I am with you. Are you Stead? What a change, what a change. Q. Can we help you at all? Do you remember the fight? A. I often wished to speak to you, but thought, I knew that many times. Hear the conversation with other spirits on the opposite side of the circle drowned the voice. You were mistaken, I wanted you to tell me something. Q. You never gave me the chance. A. I am now where I know it all. Q. Have you any message to send to any friends? A. They would scoff at it. A still tongue makes a wise head. I am where death does not end. Q. At the same time, you have left people behind here. There are a dozen candidates for your seat too. Day. A. I am not worrying over that. Q. Have you no preference for one candidate over another? Who would you like to succeed you? Mr. G. W., a member of Parliament, died about a week before this sitting. Mr. W. E. Gladstone now came in, and gently reproved Mr. Stead for his precipitancy in publishing his message in extenso. He referred to Mr. Lloyd George. I did say to Admiral Moore today that I wanted to see him. Correct, Q., you want to see him? Himself? A. Yes, and I will explain to him why I said what I did. Q. He would very much like to talk to you on the situation. A. Lloyd George has done very well. He did beautifully. I am at his back, and will help him through. He is a clever young man. A. Voice, Bjornstjernbjornsen. Mr. Stead, try and speak through the trumpet, we shall be delighted to hear if you have any message for Mrs. Anchors. Mr. K., the astral of Ella Anchors is here, and said to Miss S. A. Voice, I came to interrupt, and tell Mr. Stead that she is here, and everything is going on well. And the reason that the interruptions went on was they had to use the lady at the same time as this person was using the trumpet. A spirit now came in who gave the name of Von Basso. He seemed to be an Italian by his speech. And I think M. Berto manifested. He was the minister for war in France, and had been killed by the accidental swerving of an aeroplane a few days before. Cardinal Newman now came in, and gave a benediction in Latin. He said, my acolyte is here. We then sang, and a spirit joined in through the trumpet. Hands were touching the sitters all the evening, but I received none of these manifestations. A spirit came who whistled, believe me, if all those endearing young charms through the trumpet, and afterwards sang it as a duet with his daughter, who was present. A voice, I thought I would do it so that you could hear. How are you, Harry? The lady's husband. God bless you. A voice, Mr. Stead and a gentleman, it gives me much pleasure to be here in the presence of such an intelligent audience. It is a considerable time since I heard our good statesman speak, and it is a long time since I heard you. Mr. Stead, I don't know who you are, but I take it on trust. A. I am Sir Henry Irving. Q. Have you any message for my girl? A. I want you to understand, friends here this evening, it is well with the work you have begun, and you will end with the finest career that any man in this city, in this continent. It is well with you, it is well with me. All will be well on this earth. These flowers on the table are white, I do not know their names, but I will call them lilies, a few lilies and a large number of narcissi. The lilies in the valley will wither, the flowers in the forest decay. True love lasts forever and ever, when all else fades away. You have formed a chain. Mr. Stead, have you any word for my daughter? A. Best wishes, tell her, from Dante. Q. I do not understand. Do you mean the Italian poet Dante? A. Oh. It is well. Another voice, it is better for her to take the step and break the link. Remember, there is a coming day, not far away. Iola now manifested to me. I introduced Mr. Stead to her, they greeted one another. Mr. Stead, do you know Julia? A. I love her. A member of the circle said, Rupert was speaking to us through the other trumpet at the same time. Mr. K., Dr. Quinn is here, and says that the power is getting exhausted. Close your circle. In a few minutes we turned up the lights and went downstairs to supper. While the meal was going on, raps and thumps were experienced all over the room, in the table, on the floor, and on the walls. I sat at the end of the table, and the only way that I can describe the noises under my chair is that they appeared to be like the blows of a hammer shoring up the floor from underneath. After supper we sat round and listened to clairvoyance from Mr. K., and clairaudient messages from the same source. The percussive noises had ceased. So ended what was, perhaps, the most convincing of all the public experiences in my education. Mrs. Rhett had been under Mr. Stead's roof 32 hours, she had given 4 successful sittings, and all doubt as to the exhibition of her gift in the English climate vanished into thin air. How long it will last is another matter. Mr. Stead sat next to her the whole evening. On the morning of Thursday, May 25, 1911, a doctor from South Africa came to Mr. Stead's house by appointment. He had been introduced to Mr. Stead as a gentleman sorely in need of comfort, owing to the sad loss of a sister who had been killed in an accident some 2 months before. He was 3/4 of an hour late, which distressed him very much. He got nothing. After sitting with him for 20 minutes, Mrs. Rhett ran down to me, I had just arrived, and asked me to come up to the séance room and help, which I was only too glad to do. We three sat for half an hour talking of the conditions required, passivity, and so forth, and directing the gentleman's attention to certain salient points which we considered indispensable to a person in his position if his desire to get into touch with his relative was to be achieved. So far as phenomena were concerned, the sitting was a failure. It so happened that Mr. Stead had, with great consideration, said to me on my parting with him the previous night, "Tomorrow, ask anybody you like." I therefore cordially invited the disappointed sitter to return at 6:30 p.m., telling him that Mrs. Rhett had never known 2 blanks in one day, and it was highly probable that he had been made to arrive late on purpose so that we could meet. The afternoon was spent by Mrs. Rhett and me in London. We went to the London Spiritualistic Alliance rooms, then to a well-known doctor, A. W., in Harley Street, finally to the Royal Academy and my club. Directly she entered Dr. A. W.'s consulting room, she began correctly describing his friends and patients, together with the various diseases of the latter. Dr. W. is an investigator into psychic phenomena and a nerve specialist. His room is charged with psychic influences, and it is a common thing for loud raps to occur when he is discussing spiritism with his friends. I was hardly prepared, however, for this involuntary sforance. At last I tore the psychic away, with a promise from the doctor that he would attend the sitting at Mr. Stead's house in the evening. We got back by 6 o'clock, and by 7:10 all the members of the circle had arrived. Thursday, May 25, 1911. 7:20 to 9:15 p.m. Circle of 7 men and 3 women, including Mrs. Rhett. Atmospheric conditions good, a dry, starlight night. The chief interest in this seance lay in the success obtained by Dr. K., the gentleman from South Africa. One of the sitters was a Bengali gentleman. At least half an hour was taken up by an Arabian trying to make himself known to him without success. Dr. Sharp came in and tried to straighten matters. He said that our spirit visitor was an Arabian knight and a guide of the Bengali sitter, but we could not make much of it. Sharp talked a good deal to Dr. A.W. He said, what he has told me before more than once, that he was born at Glasgow, Dr. A.W.'s native town. Two friends came to Dr. W., and talked in a Scotch accent, but he could not identify them. Perhaps he has done so since. Iola manifested, and spoke to the Bengali gentleman and to Dr. W. She evidently thought the Indian guest ought to have attention as the greatest stranger. It was curious that she kept close to Dr. W. for strength and did not come near me, though she said, I am standing in front of you. I asked her to bring a certain spirit in the morning. An unhappy spirit came to Dr. K. After several abortive attempts she was able to give her Christian name. I have never heard a more human conversation than that which now took place. Q. From Dr. K., are you happy? A. Yes, dear, sobs in the trumpet, now that I see you are happier than you were. I am happy to see you. O. Robert, what an expense I was to you, and who is now to look after your clothes? Robert, it was hard to be cut off from you so suddenly. Hard to go. There was evidence here of that well-known fact in psychic history of the unhappiness of spirits who know that those they love on earth are feeling their loss acutely. Dean Swift spoke. In answer to a question from me, he said he was in the fifth sphere, second realm. Q. What is your color in the second realm? A. What you would call dove color. He gave a very good discourse on the benefits of spiritism. Dr. Sharp now came in for the second time, and spoke loudly and clearly without the trumpet. He dwelt upon the destiny of little children who pass into spirit life and are brought up in the kindergarten or celestial sphere. I thought this was intended for me, so I asked him, who has got charge of our little one? The reply was immediate, Grandma Dash, thereby corroborating information given, with great precision, by Grayfeather and Viola. The voices on this evening were higher up in the room than those on previous occasions, showing the increasing power of Mrs. Rhett as she became accustomed to her environment. The final act of the seance was that the trumpet hit the stenographer, who was sitting at a table writing shorthand in the dark 8 feet from the psychic. When the lights were lit, it was found in 3 pieces on the floor. Friday, May 26, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone in the dark. 11.5 to 12, noon. A quantity of narcissi on the tables. Iola came first, and talked with clear enunciation on all sorts of private matters for about 20 minutes. Then came an etherealization at the flowers. I tried hard to identify it, but was unable to see more than a little head. The psychic said she could see a small baby face. Iola came back and said it was our infant brought by her mother, who could hear everything I said. She then went away to try and bring a spirit called Lucille, whom I had asked for, but returned in about 15 minutes saying she was unable to find her. She then entered into further conversation until the power was exhausted. I returned to Southsea in the afternoon. Here ends the narrative of my education in spiritism. I may see and hear many more phenomena through Mrs. Rhett and other mediums, but I do not consider it necessary to record them for the public. I am not sure that I have not been, already, too diffuse. At any rate, I have given what I know to be true. If my experiences are of any use to those who are sitting on the gate, I rejoice. If I have given a word of comfort to the bereaved, I am more than repaid for my trouble. I entered the investigation from scientific motives, and not on account of any need for comfort myself, for I required none. No man has been more blessed than I in freedom from bereavement of those he loves. Yet I am bound to confess that, during my 7 years of investigation, I have gradually assimilated a philosophy on this grand subject of the future state of consciousness, which takes the place of orthodox religion. Of this I propose to speak in the final chapter. Chapter 11. analysis and correlations, the numbered incidents, mental phenomena, physical phenomena, no investigation of use unless both types are considered. Richard Hodgson, Thompson J. Hudson, and James Hislop, Miss Ada Besnett, mind reading considered analysis of mental phenomena, analysis of physical phenomena, correlations, the alleged dope book, a group of investigators in each American city, difficulty of declaring themselves, powerful psychics only to be found in North America, alleged collusion between mediums, evidence to the contrary, spirit controls no doubt communicate with one another, Greyfeather's feelings hurt, correlations numerous in my notes, conjurers are useful people, can do no harm to psychics such as are mentioned in this book, a conjurer convinced me finally in 1909 of the genuineness of the Bangs sisters. On summing up the numbered incidents, those which appear to me to be somewhat more remarkable than other phenomena in my narrative, I find that 40 belong to the class called mental and 75 to that called physical types. In my varied experiences, I regard clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, table tilting, automatic writing, inspirational writing, Ouija board, planchette, all as mental phenomena, because I am convinced that the material object moved is set in motion by the psychic, whose brain is impressed by the invisible intelligence. In most cases the psychic is unaware of what his hand is doing, nevertheless, it is his muscles which act subconsciously. In table tilting the psychic is often conscious of the letter coming, sometimes of a whole word. In automatic writing he is more often than not unconscious of what is on the paper until he reads what he has written. When writing inspirationally the psychic is always aware of what he is doing, and frequently constructs the sentences, using his own language and style. Physical phenomena are wholly different. Force is exerted and intelligently directed by invisible beings, dynamic force, which cannot be attributed in any way to the psychic, assuming the honesty of the latter, and which produces results such as telekinesis, materialization, etherealization, the direct voice in the trumpet, or independent of it, writing between slates, precipitating pictures, passing matter through matter, and so forth. If we set out to try and obtain evidence of the existence of discarnate spirits, we are groping hopelessly in the dark if we do not take into consideration both physical and mental instances of spirit action. Mental phenomena are specially liable to be leavened by the personality of the medium or psychic, but any amount of power in the direction will not enable them to construct a human form, or even a hand, a throat, a mouth, or a face, nor will it assist them to cause a voice to sing, whistle, or speak to the sitter and give him definite information. Therefore, when I hear a man laying down the law about any of the manifold types of spiritistic phenomena, who has not made a careful study of physical energy exerted by the unseen, I smile, and as soon as possible disengage myself from any participation with his labors. Richard Hodgson and Thompson J. Hudson were thoroughly honest expositors of the mental phenomena, but neither knew anything worth knowing of the physical types. James Hislop, the present secretary and practical head of the American Society for Psychical Research, writes voluminously. All that he states is as so much chaff before the wind, because he is lamentably ignorant of materialization and all other forms of physical manifestation. His late report upon Miss Ada Besnett, whom he calls Miss Burton, is a shocking instance of obstinate incredulity. It is out of the question that a Mayence loud, rich voice can be mistaken as emanating from the mouth of the psychic by the observer controlling her right hand, or that the whistling of Pietro from above can have any direct connection with that young lady. Miss Ada, in her normal condition, possesses no gift of singing or whistling. That the invisible intelligences who do these things are borrowing something from her organism I do not deny. We cannot obtain these phenomena unless she is present, therefore it is evident that, in some mysterious way, she unconsciously aids in their production. How, we do not know, we shall learn hereafter, if her life is spared, but at present it is pure nonsense to talk wildly about hysteria, for we have no hint of the secret yet.